Welcome to the 387th episode of the So Video Games Podcast, where I talk about any game at all, including new stuff, old stuff, and anything in between. If I am playing it, I'll be talking about it. Today, I am recording on May 5th, 2024. My name is Brad Galloway. I am not only the host of this show, but I'm also the editor of GameCritics.com. Thanks for being here, folks. As usual, today's show will kick off with housekeeping, where I discuss tidbits, news items, industry happenings, and basically anything randomly game adjacent. Before I get to that, though, I have been working on the audio. As you all know, this is the second episode now that Carlos is no longer co-host. And I'm trying to take over the mechanical production technical side of the show. Carlos has always taken care of that in the past, and prior to So Video Games, well, I guess prior to Carlos, when Corey Motley was the original co-host, shout out to Corey if he's listening. I know he's not, but in case anybody sees him, please tell him I said hi. Corey handled the audio for that as well. And then even before that, when we did the Game Critics podcast, of which there's like many, many episodes of that, I think it was Tim Spaeth handled the audio, and then I think also Richard Nyack did the audio as well. So even though I've been podcasting for like a really, really, really long time, I just never have had to learn the technical side of it, which was fine because I had my hands full doing editing and working with PR and kind of managing content and stuff. I had plenty of stuff to keep me busy, so it just never fell on my plate. But now that I am doing the solo show, it is squarely on my plate on these two shoulders right here. And so I'm kind of like crash course going to YouTube, figuring things out. And I believe that, well, I'm not going to say I believe, I hope that this episode's audio is slightly better. I got some pretty good feedback last time, which was not too bad for my first time out. And I think that I've got the slight buzz in the background nailed down. Hopefully you're not hearing it, but I will say that I am in my basement, and my basement is cold, and it's also strangely cold right now. So you might hear the furnace running in the background. I cannot turn that off, otherwise my family will freeze to death. So if you hear that intermittently, I apologize, but we got to stay alive. Otherwise, I think it should be good. So give a listen. Let me know what you think. If there's anything I can tweak or fix or improve, please let me know. My technical production skills are a work in progress, and I'm open to any and all feedback. Okay. Now, let's get on to housekeeping. It's been a pretty light week for housekeeping. I didn't really see a lot of newsworthy bits and bobs come down the pipe. So rather than just skip over it, good man Elijah, who used to write at GameCritics.com and is writing for us again and is also a prominent member of the So Video Games Discord, sent in some questions that I could use for just such an occasion. So we're going to get to a couple of those right now. And honestly, this is fine because I love Q&A anyway. So, all right, first question from Elijah says, when do you personally know it's just time to call it on a game and review it incomplete? Good question. So I guess let me first say that the official review policy at GameCritics.com, of which I am editor, have been there for more than 20 years, is that you do not need to finish a game to review it. Now, I know that some people are going to get all upset about that and send me some hate mail and stuff, but like, listen, everybody that works at Game Critics is a volunteer. There's no real money in game reviewing right now. And so we rely on the good nature of people who just love it. You know, myself included, even as the editor, there's no money in this. I'm just doing it because I love it. I have done it for, like I said, more than 20 years. And so number one, I'm not going to force somebody to play something or devote like 100 hours to something if they don't want to. So that's the first thing. But that said, that doesn't mean we're going to just like dip in, play 5 minutes and slap a number on something. So the official editorial stance of that at Game Critics, which is also my personal stance, is that you don't need to roll credits on something, but you do need to play something long enough and to understand it enough and to have enough of a grasp on it to speak intelligently about it. There are some caveats, so just hold tight for a second. So for example, if you're playing, I don't know, like Slay the Spire, right? Like Slay the Spire, classic game, really good. You could put 100 hours into that and not finish it, right? Because it's a really tough run. I've come very close myself several times, have never fully completed it. So even though I'm a big fan of that, I know that like rolling credits should not be a prerequisite to reviewing that. So I would be like, okay, if you're going to review this, play it, understand it, be able to comment on it, talk about how it stacks up to others in the genre. But you don't need to roll credits because that's a really, really big ask of someone. Same thing goes for like, oh, I don't know, like, you know, just any average game. Like, some RPGs can be 50, 60 hours on the low side, sometimes more than 100, 150 hours. I can't ask anybody to devote that much time, because when you look at other reviews, like movie reviews, you can watch a movie in 2-3 hours tops if you're watching a Marvel movie, right? You can read a book. If you're a fast reader, you can read a book in a day or two if you're a fast reader. If you are a music critic, you can hear a whole album in like an hour or less. So there's lots of things. Restaurant review, you can eat a meal in half an hour, you know? So the economics of game reviewing just don't match up, because most games require way, way, way more time than a book or a movie or a meal or anything like that. So that's kind of where we stand. I'm like, be able to talk about it, be able to have a sense of it, be able to defend that sense, be able to fully explain that sense. And I think that's fine. And the reason I think that this is okay is because, quite unlike almost every other review site out there, we tell you exactly how much time somebody put into a game at the end of every review. So if you go down to our reviews, you'll see the reviewer will say whether they finished it or not. And it's just right there. It's in bold, and even it just says, you know, game was completed or game was not completed. So it's right there. And also they'll say, reviewer put in, you know, X amount of hours, 5, 10, 20, whatever, just how much they put in. So the person reading the review can jump down and be like, well, I want to know how much of this game this person saw. And that will tell me how much weight to give their review. So if you're a person who thinks that no review should ever be written until a person rolls credits, that's fair. That's your view. It's not my view, but it's yours. And then we tell you up front. You can skip down to the bottom, see if the person completed it or not. And if you feel like that person didn't put enough time in, feel free to skip. Just bounce. Just, you know, go to some other review. You can find 1,000 of them on Metacritic or whatever. And that we're being as transparent as possible, right? Like, we're human beings. We're finite human beings with a limited lifespan. We're not infinite vampires. You can play games for an eternity before we review things. It'd be great if it was. But, you know, we just want to let you know where we're coming from. Now, the only real caveat to that is if a game is heavily story-based, right? So a lot of games are not heavily story-based. Like, there's a lot of action games where it really doesn't matter what the story is. There's a lot of mechanics games, structure games. Like in Slay the Spire, it doesn't matter what the story is. There is a story. I mean, I would challenge people to even tell me what it was other than Slay the Spire, right? Like, that's the basic story right there. So there's a lot of games where it just doesn't matter what the story is. And in those cases, I don't care about that. But there are some narrative-heavy games where a lot can really hinge on how the story wraps up. So in the case of a story heavy game, you know, something like, I don't know, Nier Automata or one of the Final Fantasies, or, you know, something where like the plot, or like a graphic novel, you know, graphic novels are all about the plot. So if there's a plot game where the story is the thing, Danganronpa even, that's the thing where I'm like, okay, no, you really need to finish this game. Because you can't really comment on the whole experience. You can talk about the mechanics and stuff, but for a game like that, people are going to want to know about the story. Does it wrap up? Is it satisfying? How's the character development? Do you feel like the narrative arc was good? Like, those things you really can't comment on until you've seen the whole thing. Just like I wouldn't ask somebody to review a movie without seeing the whole movie, because story matters in a movie. Well, most of the time anyway. Same thing for a game. So in a game where the story isn't really the focus, we're fine letting those go without being fully like completed, you know? But in a story-based game, we do ask that the people finish those all the way. But again, we'll disclose all that stuff at the end of our reviews. And in fact, if you've never seen one of our reviews, I invite you to come to GameCritics.com, read those, because we give you as much information as is humanly possible. We tell you exactly what we did, how we played it, what's in there. We also give you control information, colorblind information, deaf and hard of hearing information, parental information. We give you as much information as possible so the reader can make the decision for themselves. So hopefully that will give you a good idea of where we stand on that, because, you know, we can't satisfy everyone, but I think what we can do is just be as transparent as possible and let people decide for themselves. Okay, next question. Do you think someone could produce something like Roblox without the horrendous lack of ethics? So, okay, good question. I guess what we should do first is like explain Roblox. I bet a lot of people listening to the show probably have never played it. I have never played it myself, but I have watched 1,000 hours of it over my son's shoulder. He's really into Roblox. He plays it literally every day. So from what I gather, Roblox is kind of like a framework where kids can go in and either make their own games with a set of tools that are provided by the Roblox owners. They can make their own platformers, driving games, fighting games. My son loves the fighting games right now. It is bonkers. He's got a lot of like anime style fighting games with over the top kill animations and special moves and move sets and stuff. He plays those like literally every day. So kids can make all those own games and then they can post those for other kids to play. Or if you don't want to create your own games, you can just go in and just play games that people have made. And there's like a kajillion of like so many of them. It seems like every kid on earth is in Roblox at one point or another, right? If you have never seen Roblox for yourself, if you don't know what it's about, trust me, it is legitimately and without any exaggeration, it is one of the biggest things in video games on earth right now. So I don't know exactly what Elijah is referring to. And if anybody wants to follow up, or Elijah, if you want to follow up, that's great. What I have heard about Roblox is that A, there are some interactions which are unsavory where maybe pedophiles will get onto Roblox and chat with kids and pretend to be a kid themselves. And, you know, I've heard that there was at some point some maybe hookups happening or attempted kidnappings happen. Hookups, that's the wrong word. I apologize. That's not what I meant to say. What I meant to say is like, you know, like a pedophile kind of trapping a kid, like luring them out or something like that. Hookup was absolutely the wrong word. My bad. Or sexually explicit materials being exchanged, something like that. So, of course, there needs to be some kind of regulation for that. I think that there should be tighter watch on that. I mean, parents have to be involved also. I'm not putting this squarely on Roblox's shoulders. But as far as I know, I thought that might have been tightened up, although I'm not 100% sure. My son did say there was going to be an offshoot of Roblox, which was like a mature, as in 18 and up, version of Roblox. I don't know if that ever came to fruition. Maybe that seems like an appropriate place for people to do that kind of stuff. I'm not really sure. Basically, my bottom line on this is keep kids away from that, keep kids safe. And so whatever it takes to do that, I don't know the current status of that. But the other thing, which I think that Elijah might be referring to, is the monetization of it. So basically, from what I understand, and I'm not an expert, but from what I understand, the kids create the content by making these games, but then Roblox will like keep the money because kids have to pay. I think it's free, but then there is a subscription fee, like a monthly pass where kids get virtual currency in exchange for real currency. You can also pay real currency to get virtual currency to buy virtual items that other kids make. So, for example, my son likes to buy these different suits of armor and different skins, and like other kids will make the skin. So some kid makes the skin and then my kid pays real money for that, and Roblox keeps the real money, but then they give my kid like virtual currency in exchange for that so he can buy other skins or whatever, or the person who makes the skin gets virtual currency. From what I understand, I do not believe that any of the kids actually make real money off this. I could be wrong, but like from everybody that I know in my son's circle and like basically all of his friends play Roblox, I've never heard of any of them making any real money. My son has made a few costumes and skins himself, and when he gets paid, he just gets the virtual currency. So I'm assuming that's what probably most kids get. So if the ethical question is it ethical for kids to basically create all of Roblox content, but Roblox keep all the money? Well, that's a good question, right? So I think if the kids know what they're getting into and they're willing to do that, and, you know, the parents are aware of it and everybody goes in with their eyes open, then I guess I don't see a problem with that as long as there's education and transparency. To be fair, though, I mean, I do think that some of these Roblox games, they make like, I mean, they get like millions and millions and millions of plays. And in fact, my son was even saying one game he saw had billions of plays. So if you're even getting like a 1% or something, or like a 0.05% or something like that, that could be like a ton of money. And Roblox is a huge company. So I think it would be nice of them to share some of that money with kids and maybe make some of these kids millionaires if they're a good game creator. But if the kids know what they're getting into, and I guess it's questionable that they do or not, then I guess it's on them. If they decide, I don't want to create content for Roblox without getting paid, then I guess the choice is to not do that and not engage in that system. So I guess it really comes down to how much transparency there is. And if that's not what you're talking about, Elijah, please let me know. And again, I'm not an expert on this. I just know what I know from looking over my son's shoulder. I have not studied up on like the economics, the recent economics of Roblox. I know that my friend David Jagno, who's on Twitter, he actually wrote the book on Roblox. So I check in with him every once in a while when I need to know what's up. I couldn't get a hold of him this morning, but, you know, he is probably the best person to ask about that stuff. So hopefully that kind of sort of answered your question. And if I'm horribly wrong on this or if I have misunderstood something, please let me know, because I fully admit that Roblox is not my usual expertise. Last question from Elijah, and then we're going to move on to the main content of the show. He says, can you find one nice thing to say about the game you hate the most? Well, gosh, what game do I hate the most? I don't know that I even have a list of games that I hate. I try to move on. I try to stay positive. I try not to dwell on things, because when you start to hate stuff, it just like poisons you on the inside, and I don't need that. I've got lots of stuff going on that I worry about or that bothers me or things that are wrong in the world. Like, I got more than I can handle right now. And I got to be honest with you, games are nowhere on that list. I'm like, I mean, fascism, the genocide in Palestine, the sham democracy here in America, American quote unquote healthcare, which is like another scam, you know, lead in Lunchables. I mean, there's like a thousand things that I'm more upset about than games. And so I don't even really, I'm not even mad about games, bro. But if I had to answer this, which I will, I think one thing I could say about any game that I hate is that probably it runs. I can say that if I bought a physical copy, I could use it to stabilize my wobbly desk by putting the disc underneath that the leg that's 1 inch too short. I could say that I could use it as a as an item of self-defense. If I had a physical copy, I could throw it like a ninja star, kind of like a shuriken. What else could I say? I could also say that probably it's someone's favorite game. I think that's true. You can take any game in the world, even the worst game in the world, worst game you can think of, it doesn't matter. Any game, I guarantee you that piece of shit game that you're thinking of right now is someone's favorite game in the world. I've learned that through experience at Game Critics. Some games that I thought were just terrible, that were irredeemable, that like had nothing going for them, that no one could possibly like them. Nope. There is always, always, trust me, friends, trust me, there is always someone out there who loves that piece of shit game like nobody's business. And they write into me and they tell me that vociferously. So no matter what game it is, one thing I can say is it's somebody's favorite game. That is absolutely a truism. So there you go. All right, Elijah, thank you so much for your questions. I really appreciate it. You have given me something to talk about here in the housekeeping section, which I would have otherwise had nothing. So thank you. Very grateful. I've got more questions in store. I got one from Grabloid coming up next episode. And so if you would like your question read here on the show, please send it in to me. We've got all the contact information coming up at the end. So just drop me a line, hit me up on Twitter, hit me up on Blue Sky, Instagram, Discord, email, whatever, get a hold of me, and I absolutely will read your question. That is a promise. Before I get to the main portion of the show, I'm going to just like do a really quick tangent here. When you get old, and I am old, I'm old-ish. When you get old, your body starts to fall apart, like actually literally starts to fall apart. And I think one of the bad habits I've discovered that I've started doing when I get older is like I start to snore a little bit. I was never a snorer, or at least no one ever told me I was in my younger years, but I have discovered that I have been snoring a little bit, and sometimes I'll wake up and like my mouth will be like really dry because my mouth has been open and I've been snoring when I've been sleeping. I'm sure it looks atrocious. I'm sure it's not a good look, but there's this new thing coming out, and it's like mouth tape for snoring people. And so it's just like what you think it is. It's some kind of like medical adjacent tape that you put over your mouth. Almost looks like you're a hostage or something. Like you put it over your mouth. And then it's supposed to keep your mouth closed so that when you sleep, you're breathing through your nose, which means you're not opening your mouth to make the really super loud snoring sounds. Your mouth isn't going to be super dry, so you're going to wake up like refreshed, right? That's the theory anyway. So my wife got some of this and she's like, oh, let's try this out. So I'm like, cool, let's try it. So I put some of this tape on my mouth and it was fine at first. It felt weird, like I'm kind of silencing myself as I get ready for bed. But I put the tape on, whatever. It's just like a little circle of tape. And I go to settle in, but then I'm like, oh no, I think I need to sneeze. I probably should take this tape off real quick. And I tried to take the tape off because I didn't want to like sneeze and have my cheeks explode or whatever, right? So I take the tape off and it ripped off like so much of my lip skin. I was like, oh my God. And like, I was bleeding and like, I had these little, like I'm having these little spots that are gone from the surface of my lips, and it hurts so bad because lips are so sensitive, right? So heads up to anybody out there, if you do snore, I sympathize with you. There are many other types of ways to try to solve this, many remedies, but my suggestion would be to avoid the snoring mouth tape, because man, my lips hurt so fucking bad right now. Oh, stingy, very, very stingy. Anyway, that had nothing to do with anything. I just thought I would share that because it was funny and goofy and whatever. Okay. Now, Before we get to the main portion of the show, I just want to remind people that you can help support this podcast by going to patreon.com/thesovideogamespodcast. Every little bit helps with the cost of hosting and sometimes upgrading equipment when necessary. And I am really, really grateful to everybody who has chipped in because I just paid for the hosting. Man, hosting gets more expensive all the time, and I feel like it is ridiculous how much it costs. So anyway, if anybody would like to chip in for that, that would be super great. Thank you to everybody who is already putting their money where their ears are. Today, I would like to give a special thanks to Ray, to Travis, to Andreas, and to Bill. So they are just a few of our patron supporters. So thank you very much for that. Every dollar you chip in is greatly, greatly appreciated to help keep the show going. But I do want you all to know that you can rest assured whether you contribute or not, I'm not going to ever paywall any of the episodes or content. Everybody gets the same great show free of charge every week. I just want you to chip in if you feel like you can, if you feel like you want to, if you're able, that would be much appreciated. But I don't want anybody to be locked out of content if they can't afford it. Also, heads up that there is a Sovity Games Discord, which any listener is welcome to join. Again, free of charge. If you would like to join up and continue the conversation after the show, just shoot me an email and I will send you all the details. All right, that is all the preamble we have. Let me get to the main portion. All right, as I said before, I think something I'm going to start doing is circle back. So I'm going to circle back to games that I have talked about on previous episodes, but I am not done with, or I feel like I need to give an update to, or that I just want to kind of, you know, just keep in the zeitgeist for a few more minutes. So I'm going to do that right now. First, circle back is kind of a sad one. It's for Death Trick Double Blind, which I'm playing on the Switch. It is from a very small team. It's about a murder that happens in a circus. It's a visual novel, and you play both a detective and one of the circus performers who must try to figure out who was behind the killing. The art is great. The writing is great. I love everything about it. I was really into it. I had to put it on pause for a minute, but I came back to it. But what is the sad part, Brad? I hear you saying. Yes, I'm about to tell you right now. So as I went to go get back into the game, going to continue my save, what happened was, I don't know. Okay, so I don't drink and I don't do drugs. So I know that I wasn't drunk and I know that I wasn't high because I don't do those things. No judgment if you do, but I just don't do those things for myself. And I went to go start my save, you know, continue my game. And something about the UI had me really confused. And so I thought that I was reloading my game, but actually what I did was I deleted my game, and I could not believe it. I sat down, I had a cup of tea, I was all ready to go, gonna get back into Death Trick and find out what happened. And then zoinks, something about that UI had got me backwards, and I ended up deleting that whole save. So my circle back is I'm not ready to circle back. I now need to start a brand new game. I have to start over from completely square one because I accidentally deleted my save. So that was a huge fucking bummer, as I'm sure you can imagine. So I guess I will circle back on this again later. Next, circle back is to Sandland, the Bandai Namco RPG that I'm playing right now that is open world-ish, third person, based on the anime by Akira Toriyama of the same name, currently playing on Hulu. I believe there's 13 or 14 episodes available. And I think it's still going. I don't think all the episodes are out. I'm not sure how many episodes there are. But this is the story about a world that is a desert, and a human man teams up with a couple of demons to, they steal a tank and they start driving through the desert. And it's kind of like post-apocalyptic wasteland sort of a thing on the quest to find water for the people. The anime is great. I love it. It's really, really good. I also love this game. I think it's fantastic. I know it's funny, and it's too bad that Carlos isn't here anymore, because we talked about the demo before. Carlos really poo-pooed it. He really was not feeling the demo at all. And I was like, well, we should give it a fair shake because we just don't know. And this is one case where I would have been proven right, because the demo was in no way an accurate representation of what the full experience was, because I am loving Sandland. It is so good. I haven't played a JRPG, and this is a quasi JRPG because it's open world, real time action. I haven't played anything in this basket for quite a long time, and man, I'm just having the best time. I love, there's tons of dialogue that happens as you're going around the world, so you really get to know the characters really well. Controlling the tank feels natural, feels good. I mean, it's a tank, so be prepared for that, but it's nimble. You shoot, you got a cannon, you got machine gun, you can like modify it, add all sorts of like missile packs and armor and stuff to it, which is fucking cool. I like the story and character so far. There's been a couple of pretty good heartfelt moments. You get to work on a town in the game where you can invite new citizens to join your town to expand the abilities of the town, like grow like the shops and the options there in the town. It's just really fucking good ass game. It looks great. The graphics look just like the anime, which is amazing. So the circle back here is Sandland is fucking great. Like, it's really, really good. This is definitely going to be, I mean, unless it takes a crazy nosedive and halfway through or something, it's definitely going to be in my top 10 of the year. I'm just having like the best time with it. Just, I can't wait to get back to it every time I step away. So Sandland is definitely a huge thumbs up. I'm very glad to circle back on this one. If it's not on your radar, please put it on there, because if you're an Akira Toriyama fan, if you like the anime, or if you just want kind of a Japanese themed, you know, Japanese vibe, kind of like RPG, open worldish, real-time action, it's just really good. Everything about it is good. Like, there's no friction. There's no problems with it. Everything is thoughtfully considered. Everything rolls along. It's got good momentum. It's just fucking great. I haven't played something so light and free-flowing and fun in quite some time. I really, really like it a lot. So big, big, big thumbs up for Sandland. All right. First brand new piece of coverage for the show, a game called Outer Terror, coming to us from Rataleika Games. No, if you're a longtime listener of the show, you know that there has been a long kind of love-hate, mostly hate relationship for Rataleika Games, because they are experts at cutting amazing trailers. Every trailer they put out is straight fire. Every trailer, I'm like, damn, I want to play that game. And then I play the game and I'm like, man, I hate this game. Like, almost every single time. They had like maybe like one game that I thought was okay, but like nine out of ten times when I play a Rataleika game, I end up feeling burned because it's just either too hard or not polished enough, or it just doesn't stick for whatever reason. But the trailers are all amazing. Whoever cuts their trailers deserves like an Academy Award, because that person knows how to sell a game. So Outer Terror, what is it? It is a Vampire Survivors-like. It's offers like a bunch of characters. I want to say there's like 10 characters. They all have a different basic attack and a different special attack. And I guess I'm not even sure what the game's going for, because it seems to be a collection of like stories. When you start the game, there's a weird presentation, because when you look at the monsters, there's a lot of hand-drawn illustration. And when you look at the cosmic monster stuff in the beginning, it looks really good. It almost reminds me of like Bernie Wrightson. If you're familiar with comics, Bernie Wrightson is one of the masters of horror. Boy, I screwed that up. Sorry. But it looks like, I'm like, okay, I'm digging this vibe, like kind of creepy, a lot of use of heavy inks. Like, I like the lines, the hatching and stuff, it looks good. But then there's like a mishmash, because not everything looks that way. Like, when they get to the characters, it looks like really amateurish, kind of cheap production, kind of dashed off. It doesn't look anywhere near as good. So there's a real disparity in the visual styles of the menus and stuff. Then when you get to the game selection, there's maybe four or five different, I guess, quote unquote, stories. I played two of these so far. No, I played three so far. The first one's called like Dark Gray, and you're a guy. And he's in like a Vampire Survivors map, and enemies just start coming at him like they do in Vampire Survivors. Like, you kill them, pick up experience points, you select weapons just like you do in Vampire Survivors. And I'm like, okay, I get it, but like, what's the hook here? I mean, I guess one of the hooks is that when you move the right stick, your person will aim that way, which I guess is a slight variation on the theme, because you do have some control over which way you aim. I mean, okay. Every character has a special weapon, although there's a huge disparity in those. The first guy I tried had a stick of dynamite, and he would throw it, and it would be this really super unimpressive explosion, and it took forever for his cooldown to expire. But then one of the later characters I tried, who looked like an Inuit woman, she had a fire axe. Her super went so fast, you could have multiple supers on the screen at the same time, and it was like super, 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 super. Whereas the first guy was like super, and you'd like wait for like 3 minutes and then do another super, and it wasn't very super to begin with. So I think there's a real disparity in how they are designing these supers and how they function. Some are clearly better than others. But as I was playing this first level with the guy, I'm just running around. It feels just like basic Vampire Survivors, but doesn't look as good. The presentation is weird, because rather than a straight 2D pixel-based presentation the way that Vampire Survivors is, it is 2D and pixel-based, but they kind of stand everything up and give it kind of a little bit of fisheye effect, give it like this false depth of field effect to make it look a little bit more 3D than it is, because it's not. It's 2D. It just looks terrible. It makes things blurry. It makes things hard to read. I don't think it works. I think I would have preferred just a straight up 2D presentation. Also, there's, in doing this choice with the camera, there's also some obfuscation of what's going on. Some of the things in the level, you can't really tell if you can walk on them or if they're barriers or not. Like, it's just kind of question marks. And then some of the enemies or some of the effects will block what's going on. So like when you pick up, let's say you find a pickup and it'll say, oh, you just picked up life. Cool. But there's a little text bubble that pops up and it blocks the left part of the screen. So if there's enemies coming, you don't see those enemies because the text bubble is blocking it. Likewise, when I got to some of the bosses, there are bosses at the end of these levels, or at least two of the three levels that I played. And the bosses are so big, they obfuscate the screen. I was getting chased by one of these bosses. It was so large, I could not see my character. I could not see the screen. And in a Vampire Survivors, like, you need to be situationally aware all the time. Like, not being able to see is a huge problem. So I don't understand why they were doing it like that. Every once in a while, I would come across, like, a little unexpected message. Like, when I was playing the guy in the first story, he touched a road. There's like a road, and he's like, oh, this is the main road. I can follow it to town. And so I did, and it took me to the boss, but like that was it. Like, you know, it was just like kind of just basically telling me where the boss was. I got annihilated by the boss. It was just like this giant HP wall where I was hitting it over and over and over and over and over and over and over. It felt like forever, and he just didn't die. It's like a big blob of meat, and I couldn't kill it. Same thing for the next boss I got to when I was playing as the Inuit woman. It was like a big TV on legs, and I was kiting it around forever. I was hitting it forever, and like it just hit it with a million supers, and like it just wasn't going down. I couldn't kill it, and eventually it killed me. It just like through attrition, right? Also, I couldn't see where I was going, which sucked. So that, but it does seem to be kind of like every once in a while trying to tell a story. When I was doing the Inuit woman, I got to this part where it's like, oh, you found a note, and the note says something, but it didn't really mean anything to me. And later on, I got down to a part of the game where it's like, you found a safe zone. This is where survivors are, and you can pick up side quests here. And I'm like, okay. Ironically, everybody in this safe zone was dead, and there was no side quests to pick up. So I'm like, that's very funny. Is this a joke? Like, I don't get it. Like, why would you even tell me that to not have any survivors here? So that was really strange. I will also say that mechanically, or in terms of game design, I don't think it really excels. They give you, I want to say 8 equipment slots, and some equipment has a higher equipment value. So for example, you pick up a knife that's got an equipment value of 1. You pick up a Uzi that's an equipment value of 2. So whatever you pick up, it has to equal 8. So I guess when you're running around dodging enemies and you see a pickup, you have to think about, well, I can have 4 heavier things, or I can have 8 lighter things, or I can have a mix, like whatever, which is fine. But your slots fill up pretty quickly, and I noticed that I was like maxing them out within the first like 10 minutes of play. So I would pick up like a shotgun and a knife and the Aura of Pain, which is just like the garlic from Vampire Survivors, and, you know, a couple other things, and they would be fully maxed out in like less than 10 minutes. And then nothing else happens. Like, you don't have anything else to work towards. You're not getting any stronger. Nothing's improving. You just like hit your ceiling, your power ceiling, really quickly. And then you're just kind of running around waiting to find out, is there a story element here? Is there not a story element? What am I supposed to do? Where's the boss? I don't know. And so it just gets dull really quickly. And I just don't know really what they're going for. It seems like they want to tell kind of a mission-based game, but it doesn't work that way. I think they need a lot more clarity on that. Seems like it also wants to be a Vampire Survivors type game, but I think they're missing some of the master strokes that make Vampire Survivors the hit that it is. I mean, I think people are just kind of assuming that's a really easy game to copy, and it's super not. Like, Ponkle deserves a lot of praise because their formula is so polished and so magical. Like, it's just like crack. Like, you sit down and like, man, you're just like addicted to it. But these other people who want to do a Vampire Survivors, like, it just does not hit the same way. There's always something about it that doesn't quite work. There's always something about it that isn't quite right. And this is another example of that. I will say also that in one of the games I played, there's a character that looks like Harley Quinn, and she starts off in a desert. I'm like, okay, well, let's see what this is about. What's her power? Her power is the ability to summon a little dog that goes with her, which is cool. I have to assume it attacks people. But in her level, there were no enemies. And I was very confused. I'm like, there was no story elements. that I found. I feel like I covered the entire map. It was a small map, and I got to the end of it. I didn't see anything. There was nobody to shoot. So that was kind of confusing to me. It's a Vampire Survivors like, but there's literally no enemies, so I'm not sure what I was supposed to do. So I ended up just quitting out of that because I couldn't figure it out. Was it a glitch? Who knows? So anyway, long story short, Outer Terror, you know, I don't know. I mean, I like the idea of this kind of like maybe vignette story type focus, putting a different spin on a Vampire Survivors formula. But like literally like none of this worked for me, and I feel like there was a lot of problems with it, and I just did not have a very good time. So there you go. That is Outer Terror, coming to us from Rataleka Games. Next game is Library of Ruina, R-U-I-N-A. Playing this on the PS5. I believe it's on Xbox as well. I think it's on PC. I don't know if it's on Switch. I would not recommend it on Switch. It must be impossible to see what's going on Switch. This one is a very, very confusing one to me. I've heard about it a lot. People were telling me I should check it out because I like card-based deck builders. I like games that are a little bit left of center, games that try something new. And this is true for Library of Ruina. And on some levels, I think it's really cool and I like it, but I also super don't understand it. So what is it? You start the game as, I don't know, a guy. You're like a fixer. This is like an alternate universe where it's kind of like this weird future crappy city where there are fixers and there are people who are getting taken advantage of and lots of crime happening. And you are a fixer, which I guess I'm not even sure what that means. Maybe just like a thug or somebody who does tasks for bosses. But you get transported to this library, this like extra dimensional library, where the librarian tortures you and then recruits you into her service, and you become her emissary, I guess. And then at that point, you must lure other people into the library to take on this challenge that she's putting forth. There's supposed to be some ultimate book in the city that the librarian wants, and she needs to find clues. The way that she does this is by luring normal people into her library dimension. And when they get there, if they take on the challenge, which means usually fighting you, if they win, they get to choose whatever book they want and leave, and it's usually valuable, so it'll help them out. If they fail, which means that you defeat them, they become books and they don't leave. They die, basically. So kind of like a death game in the library. Kind of a cool idea. The story is a big part of this, and it's very unusual in that it's not well told, but I did understand what was going on in large strokes. And I do actually kind of like it. Like, I think that it's almost like this kind of narrative shorthand where the developers are not filling in all the blanks completely, but they're giving you enough to kind of get a sense of what's going on. And I have to imagine that as the game progresses, you probably will learn more and more. It seems like there's quite a bit of story to this. And it was kind of good. Like, I wasn't fully grokking the whole thing, but like I was getting enough of it that I'm like, okay, I get the vibe. I get this. This is pretty good. I see what you're going for here. Kind of like Persona Lite, way less verbose, but you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. I felt like it was enough to keep the thing moving, but not enough that I was like drowning in lore. So that was pretty good. Like, that was all right. I think the graphics were fine, kind of like hand-drawn 2D stuff, typical like JRPG style cutscenes with hand-drawn art. When you get in the battle screen, it's like a little field, enemies on the left, you're on the right. Deck of cards at the bottom of the screen, and you kind of choose which cards you want to play, and it'll be like a series of attacks or defends or whatever. I mean, the card play from what I saw was pretty standard, but it worked well from what I can gather, but I don't gather everything. So it sounds like a win so far, right? But like, the thing that I'm not saying yet, or the thing that I haven't really gotten to yet, is how much of this game absolutely confused me. And I don't even know how to even fully describe it, but what I feel like is that, similar to the story, I feel like the people who were responsible for making Library of Ruina, I feel like they are very smart. I feel like they had a very clear goal in mind. I feel like they wanted a specific experience. And I feel like they were probably very good at making that experience come to life. I feel like it probably works. But the problem is, they don't explain enough of it. It's like when you're talking to somebody and they have the full picture in their mind, so they know what they're talking about, but they only tell you like a little bit of it. They don't give you the context. They don't fill it in for you. and they kind of expect you to connect the dots on your own. But if you're lacking that shared context, you just don't know. So I feel like what's here is actually very cool, but the developers were not giving me enough to get me on board. So for example, there's lots of systems in this game, a ton of systems, a ton of small details, a ton of menu boxes, a ton of stats. And half the time I had no idea what they were doing. I didn't know what they meant. I didn't know what they signified. The tutorial tells you just the absolute barest bones basics to get started. And then you just have to kind of like trial and error figure things out. So for example, I go to this cutscene, I lure a guy into the library. I win because he's like one of the very first enemies. So he's obviously a pushover. I'm still like learning the systems. He becomes a book because I defeated him. And then I have the book. And then I'm like, I don't know what to do with this book. And they're like, would you like to burn the book? And I'm like, why would I want to burn the book? Number one, I just got this book. Number two, it's a library. Why would I be burning books? That's what Nazis do. That doesn't seem like a good thing. And then number three, if I do burn the book, what does that get me? I don't know. I have literally no idea. So I didn't burn any books because I'm like, well, I should probably accumulate resources. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't want to like lose something that I might need later. And I don't know what I'm doing here. So I'll just hang on. So I progressed the story a little bit. I lured a couple more people in, defeated them because they were also pushovers still the very beginning. And then I had like three books. And I'm like, okay, I'm not sure what to do next. And then there's like a boss battle. And then you go to this other dimension, which is like not the library dimension. It's like some other dimension. And there's this giant guy who looks like a blood clot, basically, and you're supposed to fight him. Not sure exactly why, because the game is like, it throws a lot of terms at you, a lot of jargon, and it doesn't really explain it very well. It's like, when the emotional status of your battlefield becomes intense, then you will go to this other dimension that can be modified by so-and-so. And I'm like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. I feel like when you talk to like a math professor, and if you're a math person, maybe this doesn't apply to you, but to me, I'm not a math guy. So like my math professor would be like, oh, well, you take the hypotenuse of the thing and you do the zigzag, you take this up and down, you do this thing, like just do it, right? And I'm like, dude, I have no idea what you're talking about because I'm an English major. So I feel like the people making this game totally know what they're doing, and I feel like they're successful at it, but I feel like my barrier is they are not giving me enough knowledge in order to understand what they're doing in order to fully engage with it. So when I got to this blood clot guy, he wiped the floor with me. He is like the first boss, and it's only like three or four battles in. It's like the very beginning of the game, and I could not do anything to him. I'm like, holy shit, what's going on? This guy's kicking my ass. As I tried like multiple times, couldn't beat him. And I'm like, okay, well, I need to get some help. I went to like YouTube. Nobody was having this problem. I went to like Reddit. Nobody was having this problem. And I don't even understand what's happening because people were talking like I should have a bunch of cards that I didn't have. And I was confused and I wasn't sure what was going on. And so I'm like, man, I'm lost. And I was trying to explore the menus and it's just none of it was making sense. And so I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'll burn these books and see what happens. And then so what happened was burning a book gave me new cards that I could equip in my deck. And so I'm like, okay, well, that would have been helpful to know. I wish they had been a little more clear about that. So I burn a couple books, which I just don't generally feel good about, but whatever. Burn the books. I get some new cards. I go back and study the blood clot guy's stats, and I see that he's susceptible to certain things. And so I change my deck around, and then I totally like beat him the next round. No problem. Got it. Good. So I get done with that. And then I'm just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. This is not clear. And I mean, basically, I feel like Library of Ruina to me is a really cool, fucking fascinating conversation that other people are having. And I'm kind of like standing on the periphery of it, like catching little snatches of it. But I don't know the context. I don't know really the details. And it seems like something cool that I would want to do, but I just am being kept out. Like every time I try to get in, the game kind of throws an elbow and like keeps me out. So I'm just kind of like hopping up, trying to peek over someone's shoulder to see what the cool stuff is. And I'm just not really getting it. So I got kind of tired of that. I gave it a little bit more time than I normally would because I really do think there's something cool here. I get the sense that I was kind of on the cusp of making a really neat discovery, but I'm not in that space anymore, right? I need a game to meet me halfway, and I feel like I was going more than halfway to meet this game. And it was just like not understanding that you need to get people in, which happens sometimes, right? I've met people who are brilliant, who are really good at what they do, and those people are usually terrible teachers because they know what they're doing at such a high degree they don't know how to break it down to get people who don't know what they're doing on board. So I felt like there are some really great minds at work here in the Library of Ruina, but they are terrible teachers. And that's kind of where I fell down. I just didn't want to put any more time and effort into it because it was just keeping me too much at bay and not giving me enough to go on. So I think if you want a persona like that kind of vibe, if you like deck builders, if you want something that seems really deep that you can sink your teeth into and you're willing to roll up your sleeves and just invest some time, I honestly do think that Library of Ruina is probably pretty cool. Like, it was giving me just enough signals to kind of lead me on, but it was also keeping me at bay effectively enough that it did not want me to move forward, and I felt discouraged enough to the point that I wanted to leave. So I feel mixed on this, and I did have some people tell me they really liked it a lot, and I know that these people who I trust wanted me to get into this game. I know they wouldn't lead me astray, so I believe you. I believe everyone who recommended it to me. I'm sure it's very cool, but I'm not in that headspace anymore. I can't fight this hard to get into a game. I just don't have that bandwidth right now. So pretty mixed on Library of Ruina. I feel like I didn't get to the good stuff, but I also felt like the game was kind of working overtime to keep the good stuff away from me. Not intentionally, it just was a terrible teacher. So there you go. That was my experience with Library of Ruina. All right, next up is a game called Surmount. This is a 2D mountain climbing game with some kind of like gimmicky climbing mechanic. Not to be confused with a roguelike mountain climbing game called Insurmountable, which I will be covering in the future. Very excited about that one. But this is Surmount. This was, I believe, a game made during the COVID years. I think it was made with just two people. I don't know if they were working fully remote, if they were roommates or something, but I remembered reading a little bit about this, that they came up with the idea at some kind of a game jam and made this during COVID. So this is, like I said, 2D. The characters look like me characters from you know, Nintendo's past. They're kind of like cartoony looking, like big bobbly heads and these kind of stubby arms and stuff. There's a big mountain that is the biggest mountain in the world. And it is also kind of like a roguelike mountain because the structure always changes. And no one has ever gotten to the top. And so you want to be one of the people who climbs to the top of this mountain. You start the game and you're on a bus. The bus breaks down, and this is kind of like a little tutorial teaching you about the mechanics of climbing. You get through the mechanics, and then you get to the main town where there's like a little city here. You have people to talk to. There's like a job board, I believe. There are side quests to do, and each one of these side quests has like different tasks associated with it. Somebody's like lost something, you got to bring it back, or somebody needs you to do some whatever for them. But basically, they all involve like climbing in some way. And this is not only a one-player game, but I think it's primarily positioned as a two-player game. I think they want you to play with your friends, but it is also a one-player game. And I got to be honest, I don't know how you'd even play this with two people. So I like the premise. I like the idea of a roguelike mountain. I like the idea of climbing games. I'm into these, and I think I've played... I'm not going to say that I've played every climbing game that's on console, but I've played most of them for sure. And they all kind of have one form of climbing mechanic or another where you're kind of putting hand over hand and scaling vertically. Surmount does something different. And I got to be honest with you folks, I don't think that it fucking works. So before I get into the climbing mechanics, which essentially sinks the entire game, I think the graphics are cute enough. I'm not a big fan of the Mii style characters, but it's fine. I like the idea of a roguelike mountain. I like the idea of a small town where you've got side quests. I like the idea that there's lots of stuff to do. It's a much deeper experience than I first had bargained for. And I think that's good. So I think those are all good. The problem is that I absolutely fucking despise the climbing mechanics. And since this game is all about climbing, that's a big problem. I hate it. I think it feels terrible. I feel like it's squirrely. I can't stand it. I couldn't get the hang of it. I think it's awful. So why am I ranting so much? Here's what it is. You take this character, and you can customize your character. When you're on specific surfaces, you're doing this weird thing where, like, I don't even know how to even explain it. Like, you stick a hand on, and you grab with the hand, and then you have your other hand, and you kind of go, like, hand over hand, but in a 2D fashion. And you kind of, like, rotate. Like, you put your right hand down. And then your entire body flips up with your right hand being the pivot point until your left hand makes contact with the surface. And then you grab your left hand, let go of the right hand, and then you flip your whole body over. to grab with the other hand. Like, you're kind of cartwheeling up the side of a mountain, which is really weird. It doesn't quite work as well as I'm describing it, and I'm not sure that I'm even describing it that well, because your legs get in the way, and sometimes, like, the surfaces are hard to grab to, and it just feels really awkward and strange, and it just seems like it should work better than it does. I don't think that part works very well, but that part works 1,000 times better than the other part, because there are these other surfaces where you're on them, like, the surfaces. So the part I just described is when you are like beside a surface. I'm super not explaining this well. I'm so sorry. If I could show you a picture of this, you would get what I mean. But like, at sometimes you're looking at a 2D object and you're scaling up the side of a 2D object. That's the hand over hand that I just described. There are other times when you are in front of a 2D object, like the thing is in the background and you are on top of it in the foreground, and you're climbing it more in the traditional, like, mountain climber style, where you're seeing, like, your character's back or whatever. That's the main portion. This part drives me crazy, because what happens is you're supposed to climb, you grab on with one hand, and rather than reaching up with your left hand like you would do in literally any other climbing game in the world, you use the hand that you're gripping with as a spin point, and you're supposed to spin your body like just whip it around, like circle, just go. It's spinning. You're literally spinning, and then you're supposed to fling yourself up, and then catch yourself when you get to the next grab point. This is crazy. It doesn't work, because not only is it difficult to spin your body around, and they give you a couple different configurations for that. You can either spin the Wii stick, or you can hold a direction and your person spins like a maniac, but then there's no way to predict where you're going to go. And it's so easy to get yourself off track. Like, you want to, let's say, for example, you want to throw yourself at a 45 degree angle. I mean, good luck. I guess it does depend on luck. Like, it depends on how soon you let go and how fast are you spinning it. You know, there's so many variables to this. I found it impossible to do it with any regularity. I was like flinging myself backwards and down and over. I just could not get the hang of it. It felt super chaotic, and it felt like one of those whack ass party games that you play with friends where you're not even really supposed to be doing anything. You're just having laughs at like how bad everything is going, and you're laughing because you're knocking your friend down and stuff. Like, one of those type of party games is what it felt like. It was crazy to me that you're supposed to spin yourself, because it just was so unintuitive and so hard to predict. There was no guideline. There was no way to know which way you were going to go. And I ended up just like not making any progress, like just like flinging myself and like falling back down and going back up and flinging myself wrong and falling back down. I fucking hated it. Like, I hated it. I don't think it works at all. And I mean, for anything other than like a wacky party game, as a party game, sure, you're fucking around, you're having fun, having a few beers, slice of pizza, whatever. Yeah, that's fine. It's laughs. But to like talk about climbing up this game where it's like a roguelike climbing surface and there's actually something to do, you're going to fling yourself? Like, what? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So the developers clearly realized that not everybody was able to get down with this. They give you a ton of different toggles and switches and sliders to change. And so not only can you change how you're spinning, like hold it or spin the stick, but there's also like no fall damage and infinite stamina, because you have stamina too. You can basically turn everything off, and you can also like slow it down half speed. You can also do less gravity or no gravity. And I was like, dude, I hate this game in the vanilla settings. It feels so bad to play, but I gotta mess with this a little bit to see what I can do. Maybe I can get something out of it. I slowed it down, and then I turned gravity way down, and it's like, and then it was just like, why am I even playing this, right? Because what would end up happening was I would spin myself around slowly, fling myself up the mountain. Gravity would be basically nothing, so it's almost like I was free floating through space, up, and then I grab whatever piece of the mountain, and then I started blowing through the mountain. And I'm like, well, this is dumb, because I don't feel like I'm playing this the way that it's meant to be played. I mean, I'm all for accessibility. I'm not saying get good or anything. I'm just like, I wish it just controlled completely differently, because I would like the experience and the challenge of climbing this mountain in a fun, skill-based way. And, you know, having difficulty sliders and stuff is great, but like, I feel like I had to change so many of the sliders in order to make it playable that I wasn't even playing the game, you know? Like, I wasn't even remotely close to what the experience should be. And I started to wonder why I was even playing it, right? Like, if I'm just like spinning myself up to the top of the mountain with one spin from the bottom and calling that a win. That didn't feel like a win. It didn't feel like I earned it. It didn't feel like I was even playing. It just, none of it felt good. I could not get on board with Surmount at all. And I'm very surprised that anybody can play it even. I mean, maybe it's just my brain. Maybe it's just me. But that whole spinning mechanic, which is the absolute basis of gameplay, was for me from the get-go a hard fail, do not pass, do not collect $200, do not pass go kind of a thing. It just was a failure from the start. And so, I don't know. I guess if people can find fun with it, go ahead. But for me, it was torturous. And I disliked the lack of control. I disliked the lack of specificity. I disliked the fact that I felt like I could even play it until I turned off so many options that the game was almost playing itself for me, which to me was like, what is even the point of this? So, yeah, did not have a good experience with Surmount at all. I thought it was pretty miserable and just kind of a bad idea. It did not work for me. I mean, if you like it, if anything that I've said here sounds fun, please check it out. I think mountain climbing games are in general pretty cool. But wow, this one, oil and water, man. Oil and water. This one was 1,000% not for me. Last game of the show is one that I am very, very disappointed to be talking about, and I hate to end on a downer. I really hate to, but I have to. This one is Sucker for Love 2, Date to Die For. This is a visual novel. Playing it on PC, which tells you how excited I was for it, because if you listen to the show, you know that I almost never play anything on PC. Very rare. Very rare will I play something on PC. But I did for this one, because the first Sucker for Love was great. I loved it so much. It was a story. The first one was a story about a guy who has a Necronomicon or whatever, and he's trying to summon these elder gods, but they turn out to be girls that he can date. The first one is like a Cthulhu girl. The second one is like a female version of the King in Yellow. And the third one was kind of like this like Egyptian cat goddess. Three different stories, and it all took place in his apartment. You did these little funny little incantations in the apartment. Like you would like move the cursor a certain way or read the book with the cursor a certain way. You know, do little choices in this guy's apartment. It was a very small experience. You could finish the whole game in like 2 hours maybe. And it was just a capsule where the voices were amazing. It was very funny. It was kind of sexy. It was not overt. It was not a porn game. It was just like a romancy kind of thirsty game. But it was great. I love the main character, Lynetta, the Cthulhu girl. She was my favorite. I really liked her a lot. But they were all good. It was just a really, really fun, lighthearted dating visual novel Cthulhu type experience, which I thought really worked on multiple levels. I was a huge fan, so much a fan that I bought all the stuffies of the Monster Girls from that game. I have the stuffies here in my office and I think they're great. So I think they're wonderful. So when I heard that a more content was coming, I was super excited. And at first, full disclosure, I was confused because I thought this content was DLC for the first game. It is not. It is fully a second sequel, a full-on sequel, which I did not expect. And so once I got straight on that, I'm like, okay, interesting. Let's check this out. Unfortunately, I think that maybe this is a case where, at least for me, I don't think what I liked about it was what the developer wanted to expand. And so I think we kind of went off on different tracks here. I would have been totally happy with just more of the body jokes and the dating humor and a little bit more of the Cthulhu-style stuff in a small visual novel experience. Just having more of that. I mean, even DLC would have been fine for me for the first Sucker for Love. But this one is very different. So what happens is you play a completely different character. You play a woman. I want to say her name is Stardust, I think. And she's in this town. I don't know where this town is. It does not seem to be the town from the first game. She walks through town. Weird cult stuff is happening in the town. And this is a visual novel perspective. 2D character portraits, lots of dialogue, which is fine. Everything is fully voiced, which is nice. Voices are nice. You get to your house. It seems like everybody in your family has gone missing. People in the town are going missing left and right. It's like this giant disaster. People who live in the town have these weird glowing eyes. I mean, clearly something is wrong. You get to your house, and as soon as I got to the house, I knew something bad had happened in terms of design, because in the original Sucker for Love, it's basically a single room experience. You're in the guy's apartment. You can see his bed. You can shift the perspective a little bit left and right, but it's basically one room. There's a bathroom, bedroom, and I think you could go out like on his walkway. So just like three locations, and they're very small. Like they're just like basically three rooms total. Impossible to get lost. When I'm playing here, Sucker for Love 2, I get to my house. Most of the game takes place in the house, and the house is much larger than your apartment. There's a lot of rooms. There's a bottom floor. There's a top floor, and all of the rooms look alike. It's really hard to figure out where you're going, and there's a map. It's so large that you need a map, and so you're constantly referring back to the map. You're not thinking about the talking. You're not thinking about the dating. You're thinking about, wait, where do I need to go? I'm lost. I'm confused. Oh, shit, I went the wrong way. I got to go back. Like, I'm constantly looking at the map, which was a drag. You get to your room and find out that the people of the town have summoned one of the elder gods. They spell it funny, but her name is basically Roxanne. She's like the black goat of the woods. She's like this super busty anthropomorphic goat lady who's cool. I think she's fun. But basically, like, you just have to figure out how to release her from the grasp of the cult. And the way you go about this is by doing, again, a number of incantations like you did in the first game. But rather than everything being there in the room with you, you have to kind of search the house. And so you're spending a lot of time going back and forth in the house, trying to remember which room had the thing that I needed. Wait, where was that candle? Wait, I needed that piece of meat. Was it over here? Where was it? And you're kind of getting lost. You're looking at the map constantly. And then to make matters worse, the cult in the town is in the house. And so you'll often like open a door and then the cultist is there and it's like, game over. And so you're getting a lot of these like jump scare game overs, which are just a drag because you have to like load the game back up. And I feel like everything outside of doing the incantations and talking with Roxanne is a waste of time. It's just like a lot of fluff that I don't feel like adds to the game. In fact, I feel like it detracts. Walking through these similar doors, similar hallways, not being able to intuitively know where I'm going, looking for these items. It just seems like extra for no real reason. I don't know why it's here. It's not adding the experience for me. And certainly getting jump scared and killed by the cultists is not adding anything to the experience for me. I just want to do, a little romantic back and forth. I want to do some, you know, little just jokes with Roxanne and that kind of thing. So I feel like what I liked about the first game, and I really love the first Sucker for Love. If you haven't played it, I absolutely recommend it. It was just like a blast. It was so fun. This one kind of gets away from that. And like it delivers a smaller amount of fun and it dilutes that fun by making you go through the house in these confusing pathways and getting killed a bunch of times. It just didn't work for me at all. It just felt like it was dragged out to an extreme that just took too long. It's a much longer experience than the first game, but needlessly so. I don't think it really needed to be. I would have been totally fine with a 2-hour experience. So a bummer. I don't think this one was on target. I think it kind of went astray and I was disappointed. It was nice to, I don't think it's really much of a spoiler to say that some of the characters from the first game do make a cameo, but really this is all about Roxanne, the black goat of the woods, and she's cool. But I don't know, just a bummer. I just didn't think it was as fun. I didn't think it was as concentrated and as simple and straightforward. It didn't need all this other stuff. It feels like bigger for the sake of being bigger, not that it really added anything to the formula. And I was pretty disappointed by that. So did not have as nearly as much fun as I wanted to. And that was a big bummer. So I'm going to say Sucker for Love 2, Date to Die For is kind of a miss. It's kind of a miss. But if you like the idea of dating Cthulhu style elder gods, check out the first Sucker for Love. It's really good. All right, folks, that is the main portion of the show. My reviews for this week are officially done, but I do have a few non-game things to mention. In fact, more than a few non-game things to mention. First, I want to wish a happy birthday to my son. He just recently celebrated his 15th birthday, so happy birthday, kid. Also, very close to my son's birthday, my wife and I just celebrated our 19th anniversary. Love my wife very much. She is my favorite person in the whole world. She is my absolute best friend. We spend as much time together as possible. She literally saved my life. We met when I was in kind of a dark place, and meeting her was like the best thing that could have ever happened to me. And so I'm really glad that she went on a date with me when I asked her and that things worked out and that we got married, and it's just been the best. I am the man I am today because of her, and I owe her everything. So she is just she is just like the best possible thing, the best part of me. I really love her so much. So I'm very happy to say that we are celebrating 19 years. That's excellent. I'm very glad about that. And I will say it doesn't feel like 19 years. The phrase time flies when you're having fun. We must be having fun because it in no way feels like 19 years, because when you say it out loud like that, it feels like a long time. But when I think about my wife, I just think about the fun we have. And I feel like, I don't know, like in a weird way, like we're still just like not getting to know each other really, but just like we're still like doing fun stuff and we're joking and we're like goofing around. And it still feels like so fun and energetic and fresh. It doesn't feel like 20 years at all. Like that time just like flew by. So we must be having a good time. So happy anniversary to my wife. Love you very much. Circling back to TV shows, Fallout. I just watched the first episode of Fallout on Amazon, and we had kind of a mixed experience with that. The whole family watched it. And I have to say, I basically kind of liked it. The approach of taking the video game content, giving it three protagonists. The first one is Lucy, the girl who is a vault dweller, and she needs to go find her father. The second guy was Maximus. He's one of the Brotherhood of Steel guys, and he goes out on an adventure. The third person is a ghoul who is dug up by these people who were keeping him captive, and he goes out on a bounty hunt. So having three main characters, I think, is a cool idea. It gives you different perspectives into the Fallout content. You know, special effects were great. Production value is really good. That was all fine. But I will say there was a kind of a mean-spiritedness to it. And I think that mean-spiritedness is kind of common to most of the Amazon shows that we've watched. I think they push the violence just like one notch further than it needs to go, or even further than I want it to go. And I'm not a prude. I mean, I watch horror movies, I've seen violent stuff, I watch action movies and stuff, but I just felt like, especially with these Amazon shows, I just feel like there's a little bit of like just meanness to them, where they revel in the violence just a little bit too much. So as we were watching this show, there were a couple scenes that made all of us pretty uncomfortable, and I am curious to see where the story goes. I would like to watch it, but at the same time, my wife was like, eh, I don't know, this seems kind of shitty. And I'm like, yeah, it kind of does feel shitty. And even my son, who is maybe even less sensitized to some of this than we are, even he was like, yeah, that was unnecessary. And we just, I don't know, kind of made us feel a bit gross. So I don't think we're going to be continuing. I feel kind of bad about it because I am, in a large sense, a Fallout fan, and I would like to see where this goes. But I don't know, just something about it just felt like kind of shitty and dirty and made me feel kind of dirty. And I didn't want to keep going with that. I wish they would pull back on some of the violence a little bit. It just was too much. In terms of what else we're watching, we finished Outlaw Nell. No, Renegade Nell. Sorry. Renegade Nell on Disney Plus, which I talked about before. It takes place in the 1700s. It is a supernatural story of a woman who is kind of like a highway woman. A highway person who is robbing stagecoaches, but then she gets involved in this larger plot to overthrow the Queen of England. She has a fairy who goes around with her, who gives her special powers. She goes into like bullet time matrix stuff when the fairy grants her these powers. She goes up against these Satan worshiping cultists, and it's great. I think Renegade Nell is fucking awesome. We watched all 8 episodes. Great performances, great content, great action. Really kind of like progressive stuff because people of color were integrated in the cast at all levels, which was wonderful. Really girl forward, girl power, which was good stuff. It was just really fun, really light, action-y. There were some moments of darkness that were pretty tense, but overall good balance of action and seriousness and comedy and drama. Renegade Nell is just a really good time. One of my favorite shows of the year so far, for sure. We finished Star Trek The Next Generation. We watched all the movies. I think I talked about this last episode. We were going to jump to Deep Space Nine, but my son is kind of a completist in certain ways. And he's like, no, 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 I want to watch all the Next Generation stuff first. All that was left was Picard, the series. So I heard mixed about this, and I went to go do some reading. And there are 3 seasons of Picard, and I heard that there was a lot of creative team toss-ups and some weird behind-the-scenes stuff and whatever. And the message I was getting from most people was skip seasons 1 and 2, go straight to season 3, because apparently most of the content in season 1 is Picard feeling sad about his vineyard. Season 2 introduces a bunch of characters that people said nobody cared about. And then season 3 is when the cast of Next Generation comes back and they kind of do like this like victory lap. So I took that advice to heart and we jumped straight into season 3. People told me we wouldn't be missing anything, and I think that was correct. We jumped into the first episode of season 3. It was like a fresh start. Like Beverly Crusher shows up. There's some action. We see Jean-Luc and Riker, who are both looking much older, but they're having a lot of fun together. It's like the gang is getting back together. I heard that Patrick Stewart didn't want to do a victory lap. He wanted to explore new territory for the character of Jean-Luc Picard, which I respect Pat Stu because he's obviously a badass actor. He's got lots of cred, really well respected. I mean, I don't want to like call bullshit on that, but at the same time, made famous by Next Generation, an ensemble show. And whenever somebody who gets famous by a certain show like this and then all of a sudden doesn't want to do that thing, for example, Harrison Ford, who shits all over Star Wars fans, or, you know, people who are just like, oh, I'm famous for this one thing, but I don't want to ever do this one thing because I'm tired of this. I want to move on. I mean, I get that feeling, but at the same time, have some graciousness. Be grateful for how you got famous in the first place. And so I think based on what people told me, seasons 1 and 2, like to have Star Trek fans tell me they're not even worth watching is kind of a statement. So I think his initial feeling of I want to explore Jean-Luc as an old man, I mean, maybe that's cool for thespians, maybe that's cool like as the actor himself who wants to explore that territory, but I don't think that's what the fans wanted. I think the fans wanted a victory lap of Next Generation, so they did that in season 3, and so far it's pretty fucking thumbs up, so glad we did that. Final shout out to a movie called Theater Camp. I have been a member of several professional theater productions, not as a performer, but as a behind the scenes person. And so I had a really great time doing that. Theater people are their own people for sure. And that's an exciting world that I was very lucky enough to get a glimpse into. Theater Camp is kind of a glimpse into that same world for other people, but told in a kind of a comedy drama sort of a way. It's almost entirely improv by the people in this film. It's about a summer camp for theater kids that hits financial trouble. And they have to save the camp. I really enjoyed this a lot. It was kind of surprising in some ways. It wasn't like laugh out loud funny, but knowing theater people, I felt like all of the jokes were like totally on target. I really enjoyed the good energy of it, the good spiritedness of it. It seems like this was a film that understands theater people and celebrates them. And even if it laughs at them, it's not doing it in a mean-spirited way, which was great. I also really, really appreciate it. There's one character in this film. His name is Troy. He is not a theater person. He kind of shows up and he has to help the camp out, but he's not an actor. He doesn't know what's going on. It would have been very easy to turn him into a villain because he would be like the straight, cishet, non-dramatic, non-actor guy who could have poked fun at everybody who was there at camp, but they didn't do that. They made him a person who maybe didn't understand the theater, who had no experience with it, but he was open to it. Like he eventually ended up being like a supporter of it and became sympathetic to it. And I really liked that he didn't just turn into like the usual like dumb bro jock, shitty white guy trope. Like they really did something different with Troy. And I thought it was so awesome. He really subverted my expectations, which was great and in the best possible way. So if you've been to theater camp, if you're an actor, if you're curious about theater people, I think this is a really, again, not a laugh out loud funny movie, but like a really funny look at how these people are and like how they are when they get together and what theater is like to some people. I mean, obviously it's exaggerated. Obviously it's a comedy, but it was more true than it wasn't, and I had a good time watching. My wife really enjoyed it as well. So Theater Camp is the name of that show. Really good stuff. All right, folks, that is a show. Before the closing music kicks in, I would love for you all to please leave a review. Share the show. I can't talk anymore. Share the show on social media. And most important of all, please recommend So Video Games to your friends because nothing beats good old word of mouth. And again, if you would like to support the show and help with the cost of running this podcast, you can do that over at patreon.com/ The So Video Games Podcast. And if you want to join our Discord, you're more than welcome to. That is now free of charge. Just let me know. As always, please send in your questions and comments. Hit me up, SoVideoGamesPodcast@gmail.com. Or you can reach me on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky. It's my name, BradGallaway. Always. No O's. And this is going to do it for episode 387. Thank you again for joining me here on the So Video Games Podcast. And I'll see you next week.